Good morning. This is Northern Light for Tuesday, April 16th. I'm Monica Sandresky.
And I'm Todd Moe.
More than 2 weeks late, Governor Hochul lawmakers have reached a tentative deal on the state's spending plan for the next year. A surprising change is a plan to move out-of-state centers that help people with developmental disabilities hire their own health care workers.
If you're depending on a personal assistant to get you in and out of bed or, you know, doing your trach or helping you with catheterization, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. You're going to end up in a hospital, in an institution, or dead.
The state invested $10 million in Glens Falls in 2016 to revitalize its downtown. Now the community is wrapping up those projects. We head to Glens Falls this morning.
I'm 25 years in the city, so I spent lots of time down here. I'm thrilled to see this because, to me, this is the culmination of a long-time dream.
And astronomer Eileen O'Donohue joins us this morning to guide us through what to look for in the morning and evening skies over the next month. All that's coming up on Northern Light. Stick with us.
Broadcast of Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio is supported by Fisher, Bissett, Muldowney, and McArdle, attorneys and counselors at law, with offices in Malone, Tupper Lake, and Saranac Lake. 800-941-5001. And Adirondack Foundation, connecting generous donors with the causes they care about in the places they love today, tomorrow, and always. More at AdirondackFoundation.org. And it's our spring fundraiser, so this program is also supported by you, our listeners. Amy Fireisel has been with us all morning to remind us why it's so important to support public radio.
That's right. Good morning, Todd. First, I just wanted to say thank you so much to the 11 people who made donations in the last hour. You know, big thanks to the last couple, Peter Davis and Keen. Hi, Peter. Joanne McKinney and Dexter, and Mark Dwanzik in Mountain View, California, who said, thanks for starting my quiet mornings on the West Coast with a deep connection to the Adirondacks. I love that. Also, Joanne said, listening to Todd deliver the news in the morning is a great way to start your day on a brighter note. And I agree. Like Todd said, I'm Amy Fireisel, and I'm a reporter here at North Country Public Radio. All of the reporters here, you know, we sort of cover everything, but I do a lot of in-depth, deep reporting on education, childcare, and labor issues. And that really is only possible, and all of NCPR's local, regional, North Country reporting is only possible because of our listeners. Your gifts allow us to do investigative reporting. They allow us to bring you moments of joy from all over the North Country, for us to have conversations with local artists and musicians. We are a listener-supported station, you know, and here's what that means. Small individual donations from listeners make up more than half of our budget each year. Every year, for 56 years, North Country residents have said, NCPR brings something to my life. It is worth supporting. And they, you know, you have kept us around year after year. Without your support, we wouldn't exist. That's the truth. We are your community radio station, and we're only here because you decide you want us around. It's our spring fundraiser, and we are quite literally raising money to keep NCPR on the air. So now's the time. Thank you so much to everyone who has already made a gift, which is so many people. You know, thank you, thank you. Now it's your turn. Make a gift now by calling us at 877-388-6277 or by going to ncpr.org/give. And thanks.
This is Northern Light. I'm Monica Sandresky.
And I'm Todd Moe. The hospital in Plattsburgh went into lockdown for a few hours yesterday. The incident comes 2 months after police prevented a potential mass shooting there. Kara Chapman has more.
Champlain Valley Physicians Hospital says someone called the facility and threatened an employee Monday morning. Plattsburgh City Police Chief Peter Mitchell says that set off a lockdown at the main campus at about 7:20 a.m. His agency was notified shortly after.
We went up to investigate and assist them with the lockdown.
State police and the Clinton County Sheriff's Office also responded. Mitchell said Monday morning that it was believed the threatening call came from outside the city. State police later said an individual was taken into custody from a home in nearby Beekmantown. They say they brought the person to CBPH for a mental health evaluation. Police did not give out the person's identity and said no charges were filed. Chief Mitchell says local police agencies work well together.
We have a lot of contact with each other, good cooperation, and that's good for the community.
CVPH says the lockdown was lifted at 10 a.m. Monday after officials learned there was no longer a threat. Monday's lockdown came about 2 months after local law enforcement foiled a potential mass shooting at CVPH. Police said 52-year-old Robert Thibodeau of Plattsburgh, who'd recently been fired from the hospital, was armed and on his way there to harm people. Hospital officials said at the time that the facility did not go into lockdown because CVPH learned of the alleged threat as police arrested Thibodeau. He remains in custody at the Clinton County Jail on multiple weapons charges. Plattsburgh Police Chief Peter Mitchell says officers have to take each incident for what it is.
But that one's going to obviously be in our minds, and it's trying to get everything, you know, taken care of before it gets to the point of somebody moving with a weapon like that.
Police have largely credited Thibodeau's brother, who contacted the authorities, with helping to prevent a serious incident back in February. Mitchell says it's important for people who see something threatening to say something. Kara Chapman, North Country Public Radio.
Lawmakers and Governor Kathy Hochul have reached a tentative $237 billion budget deal 15 days late after the spending plan was due. Karen DeWitt has the details.
Governor Hochul spoke in her ceremonial office at the state capitol, surrounded by top aides and budget staff.
We have the parameters of a conceptual agreement on the fiscal year 2025 state budget.
The state's Democratic legislative leaders did not attend the announcement. They were still going over the details of the tentative accord with their members. A spokesman for Senate Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins says there is no agreement yet, but says the governor and legislature are getting close. Hochul says a tentative deal on an affordable housing program will revive and reform a key tax break for real estate developers who include affordable housing units in their projects. It will also allow localities to authorize accessory dwelling units, also known as tiny houses, on homeowners' properties. The plan also offers grants to local governments who agree to build more affordable housing and would spend $500 million to develop new housing on state-owned property. The housing package also includes strengthened tenants' rights, as explained by Hochul's counsel, Liz Fine.
It's a great balance, I think, that we're reaching, both to protect small landlords and protect owners' rights, but also to make sure that we have affordable housing in New York.
The preliminary deal also adds stronger criminal penalties for hate crimes and cracks down on retail theft in illegal cannabis shops. The budget deal increases school spending, and it walks back Hochul's proposal to end what's known as Halt Harmless. That provision guarantees that no school district receives less money than it did the previous year. The governor's plan would have cut funding for half of the school districts in the state. Hochul says the entire school aid formula will be reviewed by SUNY's Rockefeller Institute and changes will be enacted next year.
We can't continue to fund our schools based on politics.
Not everyone is happy with the accord. Tenants' rights groups say the new protections fall short of provisions in the good cause eviction measure advocated by progressive Democrats. In a statement, Housing Justice for All, Sia Weaver, says it would be the weakest in the country. But New York State Republican Party Chair Ed Cox says in a statement that the new tenant protections, as well as the other housing provisions, are doomed to failure. Disability rights groups came to the Capitol to protest changes to the state's consumer-directed care program. It gives over 200,000 New Yorkers with disabilities the tools to hire their own home health care workers to help them with essential daily tasks that they can't do themselves, like eating and bathing. The new budget would eliminate the regionally based centers in New York that help administer the program and replace them with one large out-of-state entity. Denise Figueroa, the executive director of the Independent Living Center of the Hudson Valley, says the news comes as a complete surprise. She says large companies that run the programs in other states have poor track records with long delays on worker paychecks, technical glitches, and lengthy delays in hiring authorization.
If you're depending on a personal assistant to get you in and out of bed or, you know, doing your trach or helping you with catheterization, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. You're going to end up in a hospital, in an institution, or dead.
Hochul counters that the popular home health care program has grown by 1,200% in the past 8 years. She says the change will save the state $500 million and better track potential abuses.
These can be like runaway trains if you don't have someone step up and say, why is this being done this way? And is it really serving the people it's supposed to serve?
Meanwhile, lawmakers on Monday approved a fifth budget extender to keep the state running for a few more days until they can secure the remaining details and print budget bills that they can vote on. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
Listening to Northern Lights here on North Country Public Radio. It is 8:11. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Just ahead, Eileen O'Donohue with St. Lawrence University and the Adirondack Sky Center and Observatory stops by to walk us through the morning and evening skies. That conversation in just a few minutes here on Northern Light.
This is Martha Gallagher, the Adirondack Harper. Martha's music is part of our Underscore project here at North Country Public Radio. A salute to the many regional musicians in the North Country. Give a gift to support the music, the regional music you hear on this station, ncpr.org/give. Northern Light is supported by Fisher, Bissett, Muldowney, and McArdle, attorneys and counselors at law with offices in Malone, Tupper Lake, and Saranac Lake. 800-941-5001.
April is Financial Aid Awareness Month in New York State. It comes as thousands of students nationwide are struggling with financial aid delays. That's because of a major glitch in the application known as FAFSA. Nationally, there were 30% fewer FAFSA applications submitted this year compared to the same period last year. On Friday, SUNY Chancellor John King said New York's FAFSA application numbers are a little bit better, but not by much.
So that's very worrisome. At SUNY, we're just now getting information from the U.S. Education Department on the applications that were submitted. So the picture isn't clear yet, but we're doing everything we can.
SUNY schools delayed the tuition deposit deadline to May 15th. SUNY is holding information sessions, community events, and working with high schools to engage students and their families in the FAFSA process. King says the goal is to make more New Yorkers aware of the many resources available to pursue post-secondary education.
Whether that's a one-year certificate or a two-year associate's degree or a four-year bachelor's degree, there's federal aid, state aid. In fact, at SUNY, 52% of our students go tuition-free because of the federal Pell Grant program and the New York State Tuition Assistance Program.
Earlier this month, the Biden administration announced another round of student loan forgiveness programs. According to the White House, the Biden administration has now approved $146 billion in student debt relief for 4 million Americans.
The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is looking for your input on an upcoming study on how to make the coastline of Lake Ontario and the other Great Lakes more resilient in the face of climate change. The study is a regional effort from New York, the federal and tribal governments, and other states bordering the Great Lakes. Mike Padilla is with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in Illinois. He says the assessment comes on the heels of record high water levels in 2017, 2019, and 2020.
People ask, how will climate change affect tourism in my town? Will we be losing fish habitat with fisheries being a very important industry on the Great Lakes? Is my community at risk of flooding when the lake levels get high? Are the shipping costs going to increase because of having to light load ships? People are concerned about this and concerned about what climate change may bring in the future.
The state and federal governments are investing $14 million to learn what parts of the coastline are vulnerable to flooding and erosion, answer some of those questions Padilla mentioned, and make recommendations to states. The study started in 2023, is slated to wrap up in 2028. The Army Corps of Engineers is hosting two public meetings today, one at 11 o'clock this morning and another one tonight. Find a link to offer feedback and join the meeting at our website, ncpr.org.
The St. Lawrence County Office for the Aging is scrambling to find volunteer delivery drivers. They say they need help delivering lunch throughout the week to the county's older residents in Brazier Falls, Canton, Governor, Morristown, and Potsdam. Volunteers can choose their own schedule. Delivery drivers also receive reimbursements for mileage. Those interested in volunteering can reach out to the St. Lawrence County Office for the Aging.
Yesterday, we heard how a 7-mile-long canal built back in 1832 transformed the community of Glens Falls. Today, we're looking at how Glens Falls is remaking itself for a new era of growth. In the fall of 2016, Glens Falls got exciting news. It was one of the first communities in New York State to receive a new grant for $10 million called the Downtown Revitalization Initiative, or DRI. Since then, eight other North Country communities have received DRIs, including Saranac Lake, Potsdam, Ticonderoga, Lowville, and more. Glens Falls is finally getting close to finishing its DRI projects, which would make it the first in the region to do so. Amy Fire-Reisel reports on why it took so long and what to expect in the coming year.
Glen Street in downtown Glens Falls has gotten a real facelift over the last decade. 237 Glen Street is an old, gorgeously restored bank building right next to the public library.
It's a beautiful white marble stone building, four stories high, that is a landmark on Glen Street in Glens Falls.
Patrick Dowd is Glens Falls Community Development Director. The marble building is the home of WorkSmart, a shared work and meeting space. Jeff Flagg, the city's Economic Development Director, says it's a great resource for remote workers.
It's people who on occasion, at least, need a place to work off-site, you know, need places to meet clients and things like that. Sort of provides that big city touch with a small city feel.
Glens Falls DRI grant paid for part of WorkSmart's sprucing up through a small program that helped support upgrades to downtown businesses' facades and interiors. Flagg says that has a real ripple effect.
A lot of the aesthetics are really what helps, and it also helps everyone else, right? It's not just that building that benefits. All the adjoining buildings and neighboring buildings sort of benefit from the sprucing up of one.
Flagg says it's important to note that WorkSmart fronted most of the money for its restoration.
Much of the investment was from them, but the city gave them a small grant to put some furniture, fixtures, and equipment and things there.
That's kind of the point of a DRI grant, says Flagg. He says DRI investment is meant to spur and inspire improvements to a downtown area, not totally bankroll them.
This is a perfect example of, you know, the city's investment was a tiny piece.
That helps explain why, 8 years after Glens Falls received its DRI grant in 2016, the city is still working to complete its DRI projects. That juicy $10 million doesn't come in the form of an upfront check. It's mostly provided on a reimbursement basis. That means communities have to finish projects before they get money for them. And most DRI projects cost a lot more than what communities get reimbursed for. Now, lots of Glens Falls' smaller projects have already been completed, like the facade program, big murals in the Arts District, and relocating SUNY Adirondack's culinary program downtown. But Glens Falls' biggest DRI goal was to revitalize a rundown, seedier section of the downtown, located on South Street. 8 years later, that goal is finally in sight.
Okay, and so now that we're here, sort of explain to me what we're looking at.
We're in the main block of South Street between Broad Street and Elm. We're essentially one block off the downtown of Glens Falls.
A crane is working in a raised lot. Three empty buildings sit beside it.
The crane is working on the concrete foundation of the future year-round home of the Glens Falls Farmers Market.
You can see the footprint here, which is sort of a leaf-shaped enclosed pavilion that we'll use for not only the market, the farmers market year-round, but also sort of a larger market center for all sorts of festivals and events and things.
The three empty buildings just next door are also slated for rehab to turn into shops, offices, housing. This activity makes Flagg and Patrick Dowd really happy.
I'm thoroughly excited. I'm 25 years in the city, so I spent lots of time down here. I'm thrilled to see this because, to me, this is the culmination of a long-time dream.
There have been a lot of delays and obstacles since Glens Falls got the DRI grant in 2016. First, the city had to acquire and demolish buildings in the area. In 2019, it unveiled plans for the 10,000-square-foot market space. Then the pandemic hit. Material prices shot up. The city had to change its heating plans after new climate change legislation was passed. And in August of 2020, Ed Bartholomew, a former mayor and the city's longtime economic development director, who was responsible for getting the DRI grant, died unexpectedly. That was a huge blow, says Flagg.
He had been a prolific grant writer. And so 7 months later, when I was hired, there were at least 24 open grants.
Flagg says he and other city officials had to do a lot of untangling.
We spent about 6 to 8 months really trying to sort of unravel the various grants that went to the city and the county, and then to sort of make sure they were moving forward.
At that point, Flagg says they had to figure out financing for the DRI South Street project all over again.
And so, you know, you sort of scramble a little bit. You have to work with the developers. You have to work with the contractors. You know, you have to sort of find money where you can, reallocate, take some chances and take some risks. And, you know, I think it'll all pay off in the long run. But yeah, I think relief is probably the prevailing emotion at the moment.
Flagg says they expect to finish all the DRI projects by the spring of 2025, including the South Street corridor area. Amy Feiereisel, North Country Public Radio in Glens Falls.
Coming up soon, we'll have a longer story digging into the larger ripple impacts of the Glens Falls DRI grant and what officials see as the future of Glens Falls. That's coming up on Northern Light in the coming days. But right now, we have Amy Feiereisel, the reporter herself, in studio to tell us a little bit about how that reporting went and what a value that is that we get from the NCPR newsroom.
Yeah, I was thinking a lot about how NCPR, we do a lot of breaking news, you know, what's happening today. We do a lot of day reporting and day turns. But one of the things as a reporter that's so wonderful about working here and something that I think is so wonderful for our listeners is we have the time and the space to do deeper reporting.
Right.
To go deeper, right? To look at context, to look at something happening over the course of 8 years, to look at the bigger picture and how a community fits into the region. And I think that is... You know, it's a step beyond that day reporting.
Right.
And it's so valuable, I think, to our listeners. And if you think that's valuable, no, because you know that that's valuable.
Right.
Now is the time to make a gift so that we can keep doing this reporting. And you can do that by calling us at 877-388-6277 or by giving online at ncpr.org/give.
I mean, that really is a special thing, especially for a rural community to have that. I mean, it's practically unheard of in the United States to be able to have that. But it's because listeners before you have said, yes, this matters to have this contextual coverage to better understand our communities, the issues in our area. From these DRI grants to, I think, of the reporting that Emily did long term over like far right extremism in the North Country. And this matters. This helps us know where we are and who we are and the issues that face us. And this is such a valuable service. This is why I support North Country Public Radio and give my monthly contribution. And we know that matters to you too. Give now to support it at ncpr.org/give or call 877-388-6277.
And a big thanks to people who have given in just the last couple of minutes. Thank you to Christopher Cordes and Malone. Thank you to Andrew Gorlitz, who said, NCPR is an amazing resource for our community. I'm so happy to be able to support honest reporting. Thank you, Andrew. And thank you to Peter Elias in Shelburne, Vermont, who says, kudos to the supporting members who donate every month. Those are our sustainers.
Yes.
You are the backbone of this incredibly important community resource and connectivity generator.
He gets it. He gets it. Thank you so much. We want to thank you next. Give now online at ncpr.org/give or call 877-388-6277. And thanks so much.
You're listening to Northern Lights right here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Coming up in just a minute, Eileen O'Donohue is here to guide us through what to look for in the morning and evening skies over the next month. Then stick around after the show for Bird Note, One Poet Captures the Spring Migration of Sandhill Cranes. That's coming up at 8:42. But first, Todd has a look at the weather for us.
Enjoy the sunshine again today. Sunshine today, sunshine tomorrow. Highs this afternoon, upper 40s into the mid 50s, light winds out of the west southwest. Tomorrow, more sunshine, highs in the 50s, light winds out of the east. Maybe a chance of showers on Thursday and Friday. And the extended forecast calls for a slight chance of some scattered rain on Saturday. So, my advice, enjoy the sun today and tomorrow, highs upper 40s into the mid 50s.
Every month, astronomer Eileen O'Donohue joins us here in studio. She's a physics professor at St. Lawrence University and works with the Adirondack Sky Center and Observatory in Tupper Lake. And here you are to guide us through.
And we had this big event last week, and I'm still kind of in a dreamland.
Oh, what happened?
Yes. No.
Where were you during the eclipse?
I was at the total eclipse of the quad at St. Lawrence University. And we didn't have a perfectly clear view, but we just had thin clouds, so we were able to see the diamond ring effects on both ends, and we were able to see the corona. Some people were able to spot Jupiter. I didn't manage to see it. The Venus was hidden behind Gunnison Chapel from where we were, but others in the area got clearer skies. Some people, unfortunately, got clouded out. But even then, it's an event. My friend who was between Rochester and Syracuse along the lakeshore was clouded out, but it was still exciting, and they still had an event, as I did in Kansas. So it was awesome, and it took me all week to get my feet back on the earth.
Yes, as we were saying off mic, you're like, did that really happen? Did I get kicked in the head by a horse?
Yeah, it's like, oh, I had this amazing dream.
Yeah, it was incredible. I wish it was real. Well, because, too, you'd said, am I remembering this right, that the last time that you saw a total eclipse, or the only other time, it was cloudy. It was in Kansas
was,
and cloudy,
right.
And this was a
this
much
was
clearer view.
This was the first time I had seen the diamond rings. And, I was like, oh, my God, they really happen.
Yeah.
And I was also, I talk about so many cool things in here that are then duds. When I saw the diamond ring, part of me was, oh, thank God it's not a dud.
Oh, no. No, definitely not. Definitely not. I was in Tupper, and we got to see Jupiter and Venus, too.
Oh, fantastic.
And it was awesome.
I'm thrilled, yeah. So you were at the Totality in Tupper event, which
yes.
was really successful, and I'm thrilled for the Adirondack Sky Center and Observatory, because we want to keep the excitement going, because the sky is always exciting.
Yes, well, and including pivoting away from the eclipse now, I mean, coming up in the next month, there's still plenty of things to be looking at.
Right, right. Well, all the planets are kind of gathering in the morning sky right now. So Venus is still there. Uranus is still there. But unfortunately, they're very close to the sun. At sunset, they're only about 20 degrees away. So it's hard to see Uranus in the glare. So they'll all be in the morning sky, in another month or so. But then in September and October and November, we're going to have all of these guys in the evening sky. So it's going to be lovely then. And so that's something coming. And you people who love the light, you know, you are still going to get another hour on both ends. So, yeah, just keep savoring this light, and I'll go and take my little, you know, vacations cocoon. In the closet.
Yeah, but the light is, it's coming back more, but it's slowing down.
It is slowing down. We're gaining less than 3 minutes of light a day now. But it's still extending both sunrise and sunset.
Right, right. Well, and what can we be looking for in the evening skies?
Well, there's really, you know, Jupiter is still hanging out in Aries. We have the waxing crescent moon. The winter constellations, I know people love Orion and the glitteriness. They disappear really quickly because the sunrise or the sunset is getting later, and they just kind of fade away fast. And Leo is up and high, and so that is always nice to look at. And there's between Leo and the other constellation that's rising again is Arcturus in Bootes. So from the you find the Big Dipper, and from the follow the handle in it, you take the arc to Arcturus. And so behind Leo, between Leo and Arcturus, so Leo sits there like a sphinx looking west, and between them is this fairly obscure constellation called Coma Berenices, the hair of Bernice. She sacrificed her hair and laid it on the altar to bring her husband home safely from the war. And so there's a star cluster in there that's really pretty. And so if you have a dark sky, look, you know, past Leo's tail towards Arcturus with your binoculars, and there's this very glittery star cluster. And actually, there's a huge galaxy cluster beyond it. And so one of the big, beautiful clusters of galaxies. So it's a rich part of the sky over there. So it's nice to look at. And we don't see it for very long because it gets so bright. So Leo and Coma Berenices and
How much more time do we have with them, do you think?
Another month or two when they'll they'll be gone. I mean, Orion is setting before midnight already.
Yes, and, actually, I was driving back from Potsdam one evening, super clear night, and because of our last conversation, I pulled over and I spotted Leo.
It was so beautiful.
Glittering up there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Because it's one of them that looks like it what it's supposed to be, which is, you know, very rare in the sky.
And you were mentioning to me something that's coming up, an exploding star.
Yeah, that's right. There's, you know, something that's more rare than the eclipse is that we have a recurring nova. The last time it exploded was 1946. About every 80 years, this thing explodes. It's a little white dwarf star orbiting around a big red star that's puffing out these layers of dust and gas. And now and then they all of that stuff falls onto the white dwarf and it explodes. It doesn't destroy the white dwarf. It's like the surface explodes. Huh. And all of a sudden in this obscure constellation, which is Corona Borealis, the Northern Crown, which is on the other side of Arcturus, the east side, all of a sudden there's this bright star and everybody goes, what is that? So we might get the chance to see this year or next year. It's behaving the way it did before it exploded the last time, so we're all excited.
Oh, man. Yes, more to come with that.
Well, absolutely.
Eileen, thank you so much for coming on the show
today. It's always a great time. And I hope people will tell me that we did have an eclipse. Okay.
It happened. At least in Tupper Lake, it happened. Thanks so much, Eileen.
And that's it for Northern Lights on this Tuesday, April 16th.
Morning Edition continues in just a minute. Then after that, it's the Marketplace Morning Report coming up between 8:51 and 9 o'clock, where we'll get caught up on all our morning's business news. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe. Be well.